Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the McKinney Corlin Political Commentary of the Corlin Economics Report. Today is going to be all politics. We're going to start out in Washington, D.C., and then we're going to encompass the entire country when it comes to exactly what our opining is going to be concerning in terms of geographic area. Jimmy, Washington, D.C. right now is kind of a hubbub. What's going on?
Yeah, so just a couple of hours ago, and this is Friday, as we're recording, a D.C. Superior Court judge declared, and this is very, very powerful, declared that the vaccination mandates that Mayor Muriel Bowser put in place, forcing vaccinations to city employees, are unconstitutional and illegal. That the mayor, that Bowser, did not have the authority to mandate these vaccines. And further, in his 17-page statement, his ruling, he says that the city must actually pay back union workers for their lost time and rehire all those that were let go. Wow. And this is based on a case that was brought forward by the D.C. Police Union. So this is a very powerful beginning for the pushback legally, potentially around the country, because this is such a liberal judiciary area within the Washington, D.C. district.
Yeah, of course it is. Of course, yeah. So the implications could be absolutely huge, and they could do more to undermine the economic growth, whatever economic growth there might be right now, which there really isn't. We're in the second quarter of a downturn, which clearly signifies, I think is a better word, a real serious recession. But I think this could magnify it when you really stop and think about it, because the amount of union power in this country and the amount of beneficial direction that this particular Superior Court ruling has put into place really could hurt us. Give me an opinion on that, Jim.
Well, I think what it's going to do, I think it actually, it'll help out. And there, here's why I say there, it's going to cost the city, right? It's going to cost them a lot. But in the long run, what has happened is you've had a large number, maybe as much as 5% of the overall workforce in the United States, that has left jobs because of forced vaccine mandates that the federal government and the Biden regime in particular has pushed both on federal employees, on city, local, and state employees in many states, and mostly Democratic states, and then where they influenced many major corporations through kind of an information propaganda campaign to force mandates. So what this means is you may have a dam break that allows people to get back to work. It'll definitely cost cities and, if in fact it holds, and we'll see what happens on appeal. But if you get these arguments and you get these lawsuits in place, it'll get people back to work, which actually potentially could help the economic situation.
It could help the economic situation. There's no question about that. But think about what it could do to the balance sheet and the income statements of some of the companies that are going to be affected.
Oh, absolutely. And I think many of them should actually suffer the consequences of forcing people out of work. And it may definitely hurt them, and it may have an impact. And you're right, there may be an impact, an overall impact, because the number of major corporations that followed this federal guidance and the intimidation, the propaganda efforts by the Biden regime may in fact cost them a lot of money. So economically, that may hurt some of those companies, but the companies in the states that didn't push those agendas, the Floridas, the South Dakotas, many of the central U.S. states, they will not suffer the same consequences, and you'll get people going back to work. I know I have a friend there in Washington State, and his son-in-law was a state trooper. He was forced out because he wouldn't take the vaccinations, and it looks like they're getting ready for a settlement there and potentially rehire. And I think you're going to see that across the board, especially as you're seeing data that disproves the narrative that the vaccinations will actually help, and more data that's coming out that's saying they may potentially be damaging and dangerous.
Well, Jimmy, I want to say you kind of brought up a subject that I wanted to ask you about, and that subject is what's this going to do to some of the government balance sheet, government departmental balance sheet and income statements. You're talking about the Washington State Patrol, you're talking about the police departments, and you're talking about the military, Jim.
Well, absolutely. And what it's done to the military right now, it's really cost them, and they're having to spend a tremendous amount for recruitment. And we're seeing the ramifications at the city, local levels, things in Washington. I was just back last week for this speech in Skagit County, and a lot of services have been reduced because of people in the Department of Transportation that were let go and they didn't have the manpower to continue cleaning up the highways or taking care of the rest stops. A lot of these basic functions had a real difficult time manning the ferries around the islands around Washington State. Of course, they're seeing the same problems in Canada. And those types of mandates economically are going to cost those cities very significantly. But you know what? Then they stop spending money on funding and supporting their political sycophant groups that are pushing agendas. Maybe they actually have to go back and actually take care of services for the community. So from my perspective, the less money that our cities and local authorities have to waste and to take care of actual real services, the better.
Yeah.
And I do want to add, and Tucker Carlson did a very interesting piece last night. I think people should take a look at it. He basically turned around the argument. What's happened in the Senate, in congressional hearings right now, they're actually reviewing the vaccination process and how that went through the FDA. And now people like Clyburn.
Yeah.
Basically, the congressman that got Joe Biden elected by winning South Carolina, he's saying things like, well, it's Trump's fault that the vaccines don't work. But Trump never mandated them. But Tucker Carlson does a really interesting, funny spin, kind of twisting it around, saying, well, now that it's Trump's fault, we can all talk about all the problems with the vaccine. And when you start going through the problems, you realize how damaging and potentially dangerous the vaccination process was. And as you get more information and more studies that show that, you're actually going to really undermine what the regime, what the Biden regime did with forcing these mandates and, of course, Democratic governors. They are scared to death of it. So they're going to spin that, try to turn it around on Republicans, in spite of the fact that the absolutely amazing things that went on in the initial stages of the pandemic, or at least that show that basically mobilizing, hospital ships, ventilators, creating all these wonderful things in order to address something that was actually the problem of the National Institute of Health and Anthony Fauci's NIAID creating funding gain of function research inside China that potentially could have caused this problem. So basically, he didn't realize that people were turning and twisting in order to cover up what potentially was a U.S.-funded problem that destroyed the economy of the world for a couple of years.
Yeah, really did. And it certainly impacted in a negative aspect the economy of the United States for that same period of time. But when you look at the economic implications on an international scale worldwide, you're 100% right, Jim.
No, this was a global experiment on humanity in order to appease Anthony Fauci and Francis Collins, and it is sickening.
Yeah. Well, Fauci walked out of his, he's retiring, and he's walking away with well into the millions of dollars in terms of a nest egg. So one could say that he very definitely did okay, but unfortunately the country that he was theoretically in charge of did not do so okay. We're going to be right back after a break.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. time for the next segment of the McKinney-Corlin Political Commentary. Going to talk a little bit about what's going on right now in terms of political payoffs. You know, it's pretty easy to really interest voters if you promise them something. A really good example of that, and it's one of the things we're going to talk about, is how the student loans have been, to a large extent, negated, which I think is really the wrong thing to do. It's very, very bad for the economy, and I don't think it really helps the students any. Jimmy, what do you think?
So the Biden regime just announced this executive action to forgive student loans for people that make under $125,000,
right?
Forgive a $10,000 portion of their owed student loans. They extended the forgiveness or the moratorium on actually paying loans through the first of the year after the election. They actually can forgive up to $20,000 worth of debt. So across the board, economists, even left-wing journalists, are kind of questioning this, especially at this time where we have high inflation. And the White House has been unable to specifically answer how they will pay this debt, because the debt doesn't go away. The banks have the money, you know, loaned out the money on guarantees because the federal government actually took over the student loan program a couple of decades ago. The debt doesn't go away. The taxpayers are going to end up paying for it. We already are running a deficit.
Right.
And of course, you know, we've got this massive debt and we're in an inflation cycle right now. So, you know, how brilliant is this economic policy? Well, it's brilliant in one political way. I'll give it two political ways.
At least, Jim.
The first one is that the Biden regime was losing young voters significantly. They were actually dropping a lot of millennials and a real frustration, because he's basically just an old guy that really doesn't know what he's doing. And there's so many memes out there. So they were losing that demographic for the election.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a critical political movement in order to try to stop that bleeding of young millennials and actually Gen Z kids that are just getting, you know, voter age, that are laughing and saying this guy shouldn't run the country.
But so this guy is running the country because he's basically paying them off.
Yeah, that's the objective here, is to go ahead and pay off and get those voters back on. The other political issue is, okay, a lot of people are claiming, including Nancy Pelosi not long ago, saying that the executive branch does not have the authority to forgive this debt.
Right.
That they just can't do it, that they don't have the rule. And of course, the Biden regime is doing it under the Emergency Act, the COVID Emergency Act, which is just hilarious.
How can you – wait a minute, Colonel. How can you possibly – retired – how can you possibly put this under any category of COVID?
Well, that's the legal method they're doing, because – of an emergency situation. And back in 2003, 2004, Congress passed a law that allowed the executive branch and the Department of Education to take actions in a national emergency and use government funding in order to benefit, you know, the population for national emergencies. So that's the cover that this is under, which is incredibly weak in the first place. And it's going to be really hard for them to get this through politically. However, even if they can't get it through politically. So the first issue is to gain back those millennials and the young voters and to buy them off, basically buy their votes. The second issue is, if in fact it doesn't go through, if it goes through, okay, that's an advantage. They'll take the political heat. But what they're going to do is flip this around and say, oh, look at how the Republicans are attempting to attack, you know, these kids that have been suffering because of these loans.
Right.
They're going to, you know, it's just one more political angle that they're going to try and twist and turn it around and spin it back on conservatives. And unfortunately, Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy are not prepared to act on these things. They don't know how to respond.
Right.
They are falling behind, and they are always responding to the Democrats' actions, which in fact shows that they've already lost the argument.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to tell you, you're seeing some admittedly, what's the word to use here, perhaps questionable tactics to get votes, but what a great way to get votes. You tell somebody he's got $20,000 less in total payable debt, and immediately, because of me, and immediately you are their friend. And there's no emotions involved, and it's wrong, Jimmy. It's 100% wrong.
Yeah, no, I agree. This is pandering and vote buying right in the extreme. But what may happen is, and this is the flip side of this argument and this effort. One, we're going to continue to have inflation. This is not going to help the economy.
Absolutely not.
A lot of people are worried about it. And of course, the Fed just announcing just a few minutes ago, basically, that they're going to have to continue raising rates because they don't see an end to inflation.
Right.
In spite of the fact they created the inflation,
mm-hmm.
in spite of the fact that they said it was transitory, in spite of the fact that prior to that, they said that we didn't have it. It wasn't going to be a problem. So there's a lie after lie after lie after lie, which is pretty much the same thing that's going on with COVID vaccinations and everything else
mm-hmm.
With this regime. But here's the downside for them, and the risks they take. There are not that many people that actually they're going to benefit from the student loan package. They may gain in that particular demographic, and that's the way the Democrats work. They really target specific demographics to try and get them involved. But it may not overcome the memes and all the ridiculousness, and they may take the money and just laugh. But here's the other thing. All those working class Americans, people like me who never let my kids take loans and never took a college loan myself,
mm-hmm.
worked my way through college as a carpenter.
Right.
And my kids, I worked to help them get through and made them take jobs to get through and never took a debt. We're pissed. We're angry. Why the heck do you think I'm going to pay off for somebody's master's in gender studies? You know, forget it. You couldn't get a job. That's your problem. Why am I going to pay off a loan for something that you are unable to pay off because you didn't get a job that pays high enough afterwards?
Well,
that's
Jim,
your problem.
Yeah, the one thing I want to say, because we're down here to less than a minute to wrap this particular short segment up, and that is my kids are the same way. It cost us to put them through colleges, to put them through private schools without us taking on any debt or without them taking on the debt. We had to forego the big house on the hill, number one. And number two, we made sure that when they graduated, they didn't have a nickel in debt. And the one comment that I can make about that, Jim, down to 15 seconds here, so I may start talking real fast, isn't the talk necessarily about Kathy and I, but we instilled in the kids responsibility, and now they're doing very, very well. Stick around. I'm going to be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed the top of the hour news. We're back talking more politics, domestic politics. We're talking about some action taken by Joe Rogan, a guy who I have to say I am pretty impressed with the blog that he's got. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some of the other things that's going on with what I would call the substantial press. Jimmy, start out.
Joe Rogan had Mark Zuckerberg, the head of Meta or Facebook, for those that are still in the last Facebook world. He had him on yesterday afternoon. It's Thursday, the 25th of August. If you haven't seen the clip, you should watch it. Joe Rogan asks about the Hunter Biden laptop. And basically, Mark Zuckerberg says that the reason why, I mean, this is paraphrased, but the reason why they took action was because the FBI came to Facebook and took action to silence the information
mm-hmm.
of a factual of a factual story printed by the New York Post about the Hunter Biden laptop prior in October, prior to the 2020 election, Mark Zuckerberg said that the FBI had a team contact his people and explain to them that there would be a big Russian misinformation story. And they set the algorithms for Facebook to silence it. And of course, Twitter and others silenced the story just prior to the election. What that says is that the FBI, in spite of having the laptop for a year prior to the election, knowing that it was accurate information, actively used law enforcement and intimidation tactics to silence critics and to use big tech, platforms in order to silence the actual reporting of something that would have had a direct impact on the outcome of the November 2020 election. That is the FBI getting directly involved in an election to undermine, actually to support a candidate, and to attempt to claim that the Russian disinformation may have been planted by Trump supporters. Yep. That is continuing the story that the FBI planted from the 2015 and the 2016 primaries, election, and afterwards through 2017 and 2018 to assault the sitting president. The FBI and their counterintelligence division directly involved with undermining the legitimacy of a U.S. election.
Well, there's no question, Jimmy, whatsoever in my mind, and we've been following this for a long time. You and I have been following these particular elections since about 2014. What I want to say is what we are talking about, really, the important thing for listeners to realize is you may not agree with both sides of the story, but you have to be very aware of what both sides of the story are, because that is the only way that you can make an informed decision. You got to be able to argue both sides. Critical to understand that. Jimmy, go ahead.
Yeah, so it's about 1 p.m. on the East Coast, 1:15 p.m. on the East Coast on Friday, the 26th of August. And the Department of Justice just released the redacted version of the affidavit to support the search warrant for the Mar-a-Lago estate and Trump's private personal presidential papers.
I got to believe that was pretty heavily redacted.
When you look, there's a few arguments up front, and then you go through the 30, however many some pages, and a vast majority of it is a large portion of it is redacted.
Yeah.
All the significant elements and whatever information that might, in fact, imply some sort of a source or a subsource that might include people that worked inside the Mar-a-Lago residence or actually anybody. It could have been anybody, because they're actually quoting press arguments. They're actually using information from, open source from inside the affidavit, which, again, to me is absolutely incredible that they are depending so much on comments from people in the press sources in order to justify this. What it implies to me, very similar action that they took in 2016, planting information in press and then using that information to justify their actions in order to push the Russia collusion narrative. And the FBI did that, and they've been proven to do that. There's no question about it. People actually, Kevin Kleinsmith, FBI lawyer, was convicted of actually fraudulently manipulating documents in order to help justify a warrant in order to use a FISA surveillance action against the entire Trump team. This is using law enforcement in the most political means possible. Mm-hmm. And now let's compare this, Al. Let's compare what happened at Mar-a-Lago and this 37-page affidavit and what happened with Hillary Clinton when it was found out that she had an entire server system in her basement to avoid FOIA requests and had classified documents on that. Where was the search warrant? Where was the people that went through and investigated? You know what they did? The FBI actually destroyed evidence in support. They actually destroyed laptops and cell phones for the Clinton legal team and allowed multiple people to come in and testify to protect her in the investigation and cover it up. And you know what? It was the same counterintelligence division of the FBI that is doing this other action against Donald Trump. In spite of the fact that Hillary Clinton and James Comey actively identified numerous very sensitive classified information, and some of that information actually implicated that the Obama administration lied about the Benghazi raid and the justification for the deaths and what happened with the Benghazi raid, where four Americans were killed, including a U.S. ambassador. They covered that up, and now they're using every tool in the book to attack a former president who has the authorities in order to declassify and basically has control of the documents, regardless of classification or not, because he's the premier executive authority.
Right. Doesn't this show you how much of a problem the swamp really is? I mean, the swamp, basically, leave it up to listeners' own minds to decide what the swamp consists of, but they basically were very, very concerned about Trump when he was the president. They were very, very concerned when Trump beat Hillary Clinton in the election back in 2015, and you had some of the most powerful people in the country representing the swamp, who did everything in their power to totally demean the president of the United States, and they did a pretty good job of that.
Well, they did, and what they're doing is that they're inflaming hatred.
Right.
So there's, you know, I have this philosophy. There's two ways to lead. There's to co-opt or to coerce. If you co-opt, you're using logic, you're losing compassion, you're using reasonable discussion in order to get people to understand what their objective is. If you're coercing, you're using force. You're using guns, using threats of violence, and you're inflaming hatred.
Right.
And what they're doing is they're inflaming hatred on the left in order to say that this guy, that Donald Trump, is so dangerous to the actual nation that we've got to get rid of him, and we can use any means necessary to do it. And what it basically is politicized people inside the U.S. federal government that are so politically concerned about their status and the whole corruption falling down, they're going to do anything to protect it. And that's what we're facing right now in America. The level of corruption is becoming so clear, and thank God that people are starting to see it.
Well, let me ask you a question about your last statement there, Jimmy. Are people really starting to see it? I would maintain. Let me just give you my opinion. I would maintain that.
You got only 10 seconds.
Let's cover this over into the second half. We're going to be right back, you guys. Hey, welcome back. We're here to wrap up the McKinney-Corlin political commentary, which is getting to be an incredibly integral part of KER politics. You know, in the first segment, we talked about the COVID mandate collapse. Second segment, we talked about political payoffs. Third segment, we talk about, is there a potential FBI involvement in elections, along with perhaps an organization like Facebook. In this last section, Jimmy, we're going to wrap everything up. Why don't you start?
Yeah, so we've been seeing some poll numbers that show Joe Biden getting a little bit better support, somewhere in the drop from the low 30s to 40, basically 8 to 10 point increase over the last few weeks.
Right.
Interesting that, in fact, you know, Joe Biden had COVID. He was out for a couple weeks because of it. It lingered for a while. He still was pitching the vaccinations and the fact that he was boosted. So it's a little bit contradictory for the Democratic run House oversight review of the vaccine process to blame Trump for the vaccine when the Biden regime continues to push the vaccinations even today. And of course, we're seeing the fallback, as we mentioned in the first segment, with the Superior Court in D.C., kind of maybe opening the dam with legal issues for states and cities that have forced the mandates, and probably in a federal situation in the future as well.
You know, we talked about something that I think is also very important, and that is that with the Superior Court decision in Washington, D.C., what's that going to do to the economy of many of the, I would have to say, firms that are involved in this collapse?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Well, we talked a little bit about that first segment, but I do think you're going to see, you know, the potential for some of them paying some pretty big fines and probably some legal payouts for staff that they were forced out. And yeah, of course, we're going to see that in city, as we talked earlier about the cities and the counties and the states that have done that. If in fact, you know, this stuff holds up in court, and with all the information coming out about the vaccinations and lawsuits against Pfizer being the most corrupt country and company in the world, the one that has paid the largest fine for fraud in history, may in fact face some serious legal liability in time. And certainly if Democrats lose the House and potentially the Senate, they'll face some very serious investigations and, you know, may be forced to pay some very, very big fines. So that will have a big impact.
What's that going to, I mean, in your opinion, Jimmy, is that going to perhaps, if it goes the way you just intimated that it might, would that involve Fauci in any way, shape, or form?
So I do believe that there's going to be no way that Francis Collins, Anthony Fauci, some of the other FDA officials, some of the people that Peter Desick from North Carolina, some of the people that have actually were involved in attempting to separate the U.S. government's involvement in Wuhan lab funding and funding for gain-of-function research that circumvented congressional and even executive orders from 2014.
Yeah,
under the Obama administration. I do think you're going to see a lot of potential problems there. It for him legally, for Fauci and people like that. I think there's, you know, it's hard to say right now in America because most of the congressional testimonies and these different hearings become showboats.
Yeah.
Without little function. But in this case, there was so much damage done to the economy, so much damage done to individuals, and the information coming out about pushing these vaccinations and the continual lies that have come out of the federal government. But more importantly, when the government got involved in censoring information that was either factual or well researched or inquiring, when the government got involved in censoring that type of information and public attack, there's some liabilities there that I think Fauci and many others will face. And in conjunction with what the FBI and the DOJ have been doing with both the Trump, this whole Mar-a-Lago investigation, but what we're seeing they did to protect Hunter Biden, as we mentioned in the previous segment. I mean, there's going to be a lot of liability if this stuff opens up. And I think there's a level of desperation right now in the Democratic Party, in the Democratic leadership, and with the global corporate entities that are attempting to control these messages and control this this information, that they may be facing liability. And I think part of the reason why you're seeing some of these polling numbers go up is because the same companies, corporations, global entities that actually run some of this polling information are connected very directly to those very influential corporations and political actors.
Jim, in what sense are they connected?
So let's say, Nate Silver's, whatever it is, 5-3, I can't remember his little organization. It actually is, he does polling, right? And he's mm-hmm. the one that is kind of on the left. He's the guy that is quoted by New York Times, by the Washington Post, by CNN, by all these people, Nate Silver's little polling organization. He's actually owned by ABC Disney.
Isn't that interesting?
So you've got corporate entities that are very directly involved. Basically, the entire political world of the United States has become one giant grift activity, one after another. People like the Lincoln Project, you know, who's funding them? And when you see these poll numbers for Joe Biden and you see them coming up, I'm going to speculate that a lot of this is driven by, you know, very skewed type of polling. It's very easy to skew a poll based on how you ask the question.
You bet it is. Numbers can be made to say anything.
That's right. Statistics don't lie, but liars use statistics all the time.
Right.
And here's what may be happening. I think that a lot of this push by these big global corporate entities, the Democratic Party, and some of these pollsters that are very much supporting the administration, the regime that's in power, because they can buy what they want out of it. I think they are attempting to raise Biden's profile right now so that they can keep funding going into the midterms, because their numbers were so far down and the implications were severe for the Democratic Party in the midterm elections, based on all historical precedents of a president that's in such bad shape, that in fact funding was probably an issue. And you know, people are going to say, "Oh, there's getting all kinds of funding, little donors, and a lot of this." But the reality is, they need a lot, because they've got an entire, you know, unbelievable market of an entire economy that's built on this whole political craziness. And as well as the media that's connected with it, the corporate media that's trying to protect an agenda. And that agenda is to crush small business, so the big corporations, the Amazons, Googles, Microsoft, so they own, control everything based on their agenda, and we all become their slaves.
Yeah. You know, one thing I have to say is, isn't it interesting how complicated and interwoven the COVID situation has gotten to be in the United States? I mean, you look at its involvement in the business community, you look at its involvement in the political community, you look at its involvement in the medical community, and on and on and on. Somebody really did a masterful job in terms of getting COVID involved in the United States, Jim.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got to look back to the Chinese, the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, the Chinese Communist Party, and all the actors that were manipulated by propaganda that scared the heck out of people when the first lockdowns in China were happening and people were falling dead on the street. People were incredibly afraid of this. And it was a propaganda effort. It was an incredibly effective information warfare campaign. And again, many people in America, a lot of politicians used it to their advantage. And because of that, now they're going to have to face the music if we can keep an open press. But they don't just want to take your guns. I think it was Alex Jones even said, they want to take your tongue. They want to silence people. And what we see, what the FBI did with the Hunter Biden laptop, what they did with Mar-a-Lago, what were they doing around the country with silencing facts on the COVID research that's coming out, incredibly, right, incredibly damaging.
Jimmy, I want to wrap this up with the following statement, and the statement is incredibly, and that is the following. Incredible, and that is the following. Look at both sides of every story, and that way you can make an informed decision.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.